Go ahead and get started. My name is Sophie. I'm an addict and I'm currently serving as one of the online service area delegates, along with Cameron from Canada and Tom from Sweden, who are also our delegates. Hey guys, thank you guys for being here. Our alternate delegates, Francine from Canada and Shane from Washington in America. Thank you also for being here. Just again, welcome all of you. This is to help you be better trust help all of us be better trusted servants. No question is off the table. Just to let you know, we're going to talk a little bit about the importance of the group conscience, what is a GSR, a little bit about Cocaine Anonymous structure, how that works, and then we're going to do a mock group conscience, which will include a motion, friendly amendments, fifth concept statements, just to really just understand the basics of it all. So what I'm going to do right now is turn it over to Cameron, who's going to just talk to us for a few minutes about what is a group conscience and the importance of it. Cameron, it's all yours, honey.
Oh, terrific. Thanks, Sophie. My name is Cameron, most powerful CA member in the world. Well, I'm trying to convince the fellowship of that, but I am the GSR for the CA Service Sponsorship Group, which was born out of a resentment. Yay, that's what most groups get born out of, a resentment. And, I saw a need for better trusted servants within our fellowship. And I think one of the biggest issues that can come up is in terms of concept nine, the choosing and the selection process of our trusted servants, either at the group level, the district or area level, and even at the world level. Sophie, I just wanted to mention a little bit about the structure of CA and how that works so we can put everything into context. So the first thing to remember is everything we do in Cocaine Anonymous, whether it's at the one-on-one level, the group level, the district area level, or the world level, it's all designed for one sole purpose, no matter how grandiose it might seem, and the hoopalas that go on with standing committees and the World Conference and that. Everything we do is designed for one sole purpose, and that's to support the group at doing what the group does best. And that's tradition five, carrying its message to the addict that still suffers. Everything we do is for that sole primary purpose. And the structure for doing that, the groups are at the top of what we call the inverted pyramid. Everything is designed to support the group. The group is the basic building block to the entire CA fellowship. Underneath the groups are the districts. These are committees that are formed by the groups that realize, let's leverage out our service structure so that we have a service committee at the district level that can support the group. So, they do things like call lines and H&I and maybe a convention, et cetera, et cetera. Underneath the districts are the areas. So the groups elect GSRs. GSRs is the most important position there is in the whole structure, and we'll come back to that in a few minutes. The GSRs elect DSRs if you have a district service representative, and then just and then at the area level, you have your elected delegates, and the delegates represent the area as a whole, which supports the district, which support the groups. And then at the bottom of the pyramid is the World Service structure, the conference, the World Service Office, the Board of Trustees, and they're all there to support the areas, which ultimately support the groups. And this is a very important structure. The groups are most important. I can't reiterate that enough, the importance of the groups. And it really rubs my rhubarb the wrong way when districts and areas try to mandate to the groups what they can or cannot do. And that's why it behooves every GSR here to be very familiar with your traditions and how they work, so you don't get districts and areas trying to mandate and govern your activities. And one of the key traditions is tradition four, giving each group the inviolate right of autonomy to do what they need to do, so that no possible message that could be carried to the addict that still suffers could ever be excluded. That's why tradition four is so important. So groups come together and they elect a GSR. The GSR is definitely the most important position, and to get to becoming a GSR is we have this thing called the group conscience. The group conscience comes together and it selects a person who will represent the group. GSRs within the group structure can have a number of roles, and Sophie will explain a little bit more about that. One of them is they are usually the most familiar with the traditions and how they work. Often they're asked to be the chair of a business meeting or to facilitate when a schism arrives in the group, to alleviate that schism through facilitating some kind of unity or consensus. And that's, you know, and that's another important thing is the traditions are our recipe for unity, whereas the 12 steps is our recipe for recovery. Our traditions are our recipe for unity. And the GSR is very adept at how they work and how they can be applied within the group structure. So nothing interferes or gets in the way of our ability to carry the message to the addict that still suffers. The group conscience is easily defined. You know, it is the culmination of all the participating members, their thoughts and ideas as to what the group needs to do to carry that message. Ideally, within a group structure, we have what's called consensus, which is two-thirds of the group, the voting members are in agreement, two-thirds or more. That is ideal. You know, a simple majority vote where like you got 10 people and six vote yay and four vote no. Well, that can, you know, almost half of the room is out of, you know, joint with the majority vote. So I'm a big fan of consensus. And sometimes when there's a motion on the floor that's being debated in the group, and there's a lot of controversy around it, and you've only got barely an edge voting one way or another, it often behooves us to perhaps table that motion, give some more thought to it, some more research, and revisit it at the next business meeting or even at subsequently, you know, two or three business meetings so that some kind of consensus can be reached. And that really helps with the harmony and the unity of the group's effort to be solely focused. I'm going to sound like a broken record, to carry the message to the addict that still suffers. Sophie, I see a number of things here that I was supposed to cover, like service and home group, trusted servants, informed GC. Do you want me to cover all those points?
Yeah, just okay. Because we think they're important for a group to run effectively.
Okay. So as I said, you know, the group conscience is the prevailing thought of the group, ideally two-thirds or more. The GSR, as I said, is definitely the most important building block, because the GSR not only is part and parcel to the harmony of a group, but they also carry the group's consensual message to the district or the area, and they represent the group there. And another element of our service structure that GSR should be familiar with are the workings of our service concepts. Now they get a little more, you know, headier than the traditions, but they're fairly straightforward when you delve into them. If you're familiar with our group, CA Service Sponsorship .org, we have a manual on it's an easy to how to understand and apply the 12 traditions, and we also have a workbook on understanding and applying the 12 concepts. One of the things a lot of, you know, we talk about the group conscience, and we carry that group conscience to the district or area level. Now, everything is about an informed consciousness. So you have the group members get together, there's a motion on the table, like this prevailing one we got right now with changing tradition 11 from the way it reads to be anonymous at the level of public media. And let's say the group decides, well, we're for it. So as many of you have already participated, the group conscience informs the area that our group has voted yes on this particular motion, which will be on the conference floor next month. Now, so an informed group conscience, eventually this goes to our delegates. That'll go to me, it'll go to Sophie, it'll go to Tom. And when we go to a conference in Dallas, Texas in August, we carry the area's group conscience, which was formed by the group conscience of each and of each group within the rubric of the CA online service area. Now at conference, there's going to be a lot of different delegates weighing in on this motion. And we're going to hear things that maybe you as a group, or we have as discussed as an area, we might not have been privy to or not aware of, or not, you know, familiar with that perspective. And then all of a sudden we realize by hearing all these other opinions that maybe the way we were asked to vote is not for the benefit of CA and ultimately carrying the message to the addict that still suffers. And we realize that the prevailing group conscience at the CA online service area is not, that's not how we should vote. And concept three gives us the right of decision, which when new information is added, we can change the vote. Now the group or the area might not like that, but that's ultimately the spirit of concept three. It gives each member, and this includes the GSRs, the DSRs, the delegates, the right to that, to make an informed decision on behalf of those that they represent. And so often a GSR might come to the area and the GSR of that particular group wants to vote this, this group conscience wants to vote on a motion on the area floor. But as you hear the other GSRs weigh in on it, you realize, you know what, our group's not right. We need to vote with this way. And the right of decision gives the GSR to vote in a way based on that group conscience. I hope I made that clear. I wasn't getting too convoluted with that description. Again, you know, the notion of, remember, we're trusted servants. We're not here to govern. We're not here to mandate. It's a flattened hierarchy. Everyone has one vote. There are no, you know, rulers or spokespeople within the fellowship. We're all part of this thing we call the fellowship, and we're given certain responsibilities and duties to serve our group or our district or our area or world, to serve. That's the key word. We're here to serve. You know, the trustee, which is a really horrendous job, and they are at the bottom of the pyramid. They are literally the lowest person on the totem pole, and they serve everyone. It is really a daunting position. And as a GSR, you'll kind of get that too. Your job as GSR is to serve the group, to be a trusted servant, to carry the message to area, to be an active member of the group, and you know, to facilitate schisms when they arise using the traditions and so on. And that's kind of, in a nutshell, group service and home group, trusted servants, and taking an informed group conscience. Who can form the group conscience? Well, any member of your group can be part of that group conscience. The chair of a group, often the chair is asked to facilitate the business meetings. They're a neutral party. They don't have an opinion. When a chair weighs in on their opinion, that's really a faux pas. They're not supposed to do that. The chair is supposed to be neutral because they're there to serve the entire service committee. Who can vote? Well, concept four gives every member of CA the right of participation. You know, on their duties and depending on their duties and responsibilities, but everyone has a right to participate. And that really works from the group right up to world. Even though you might not be part of the world conference, your ability to vote is there because you elected a GSR, hopefully using concept nine, good leadership selection and mentoring and so forth. That GSR participates at the area and ultimately elects the delegate, who then represents the area, which is representing the groups at World Conference. So our votes are very important at the group level because it carries through to the area and ultimately at the world. So actually your vote and your thought is being carried by the delegates at the world level. And you are participating in that very important process of bringing together Cocaine Anonymous as a single unity, a fellowship. Once again, to support everything which is the group to do what they do best, and that's carry the message to the addict still suffers. I see a note on minutes. I'm a big fan of minutes. I'm the archivist for Cocaine Anonymous out of LA, although we're moving to Phoenix in September, our new World Service office. I like the written record. We keep minutes so we know what was said, we know what was voted on, and those minutes provide a ratified record of the development of our, at the group level or the district level or the area level, and we certainly keep minutes at the world level also. I'll say one last thing that I'd love to see more with our standing committees, whether at the group level or district or area. I'd love to see more pass it on documents. That's why I wrote the 12 traditions workbook and the 12 concept workbook. These are pass it on documents that allow, like when I rotate out or I drop dead, and I can't imagine this world without me, but the day will come. There's documentation that's effective and allows you, the new person coming into that role, rotating in, to be the best trusted servant you can be. So I'm a big fan of pass it on documents, manuals and how-tos and all that sort of stuff. And we have a number of that on the CA online .org website to support the groups to do what they do. And I think that covers it. Did I miss anything, Sophie?
I don't think so. I want to take a moment and ask questions. I think the majority of this will be in our role play group conscience edition. But if anybody has any questions for Cameron, anything that we covered for myself, Cameron, or Tom, please raise your Zoom hands. JoJo, come on in.
JoJo, addict. Thank you, Cameron. Thank you, Sophie, for putting this workshop on. There's quite a lot of debate when voting, if you're a GSR, at your home group conscience, because obviously you have the vote in a tie. So can you vote when you are holding a group conscience, or is your vote, you can't vote and you just have the final vote if there is a tie? Because some people tell me I can vote, some people tell me I can't, and so, yeah, I'd just like to clarify that.
Well, that's a good question. I'll tackle it first, if that's all right, Sophie. The chair is usually the tiebreaker. Should a tie occur, the neutral party, the chair, which they don't normally like to do because they like to remain neutral in their position, will cast a deciding vote in the case of a tie. For me, now this is a personal opinion, I think a tie is the worst possible outcome, because it shows a division within the fellowship. And what it tells me is a better course of action, perhaps a more prudent course of action, would be to table the motion so that at the next business meeting, further discussion could be taken so we can move towards more of a consensus rather than a simple tie-breaking vote. Because at the end, if let's say the chair, is usually the neutral party, weighs in on the deciding vote, half of the room is upset because they were voting on the other side, and that can create schisms depending on the volatility of the motion being debated. So I as a chair, if I was chairing, I might suggest to the group conscience and the group members that perhaps maybe more discussion, more debate is needed around this very divisive motion. And I would offer a suggestion that we table it and bring it up at the next business meeting. That would be my preference to how it would be handled. But in the case of if the vote is going to be taken and there's going to be a deciding vote, then it's usually the chair or whoever's chairing the business meeting, they would provide the deciding vote. Sophie, anything to add?
I just want to add that I think it's up to each group individually who takes the group conscience. I know some groups have the GSR take it. Other groups, like my home group, has a group secretary that keeps the minutes, takes the group conscience, sets the agenda. This way, then the GSR can be a part and participate and vote in the group conscience. But that's the beauty of Tradition 4, as I understand it, is each group can figure out what's best for them. JoJo, did that answer your question, honey?
I have a, if I can chime in.
Yeah, go ahead. Absolutely.
Colleague addict. Many groups had a misconception about that the GSR should always be chairing the group's business meetings. But I have some, I'm talking. Oh, sorry. Yeah, anyway.
Jojo is breaking up and I don't think she can hear it.
No.
Jojo, I can't mute her.
If I'm taking content,
I muted her.
Sorry, I've just got out my car connected to my Wi-Fi.
Jojo, how do you keep breaking up? Okay, Tom, you want to come in?
As she, it kind of answers my question, because as GSR, obviously, I'd like, let me go in and.
Okay, there you go.
Jojo, you're breaking up, honey. You're breaking up. When you get somewhere with a better signal, thank you. Go ahead, Tom.
Yeah, okay. The thing is that a lot of groups think that the GSR should automatically be the one chairing the business meeting. But it doesn't have to be like that. The group conscience can decide anybody who is up for it. And chairing the business meeting is quite a responsibility, quite an honor. Sometimes, because you're actually giving up your voice to make sure that the group conscience will be clear and concise. So it's a big thing. And in my opinion, I think sometimes it's good to have the GSR chairing the meetings, because from my experience, the GSR's voice are always heard very much and very often in the groups, and having them step back a little, maybe gives room for new thoughts and new ideas from new members. That's my take. Thank you.
Sorry, I'm back, Jojo Addict. It kind of answers my question. I don't know if I missed it there with Tom. But so if I'm GSR and I'm taking the GC, I can't have a vote. I can't vote in the GC. I just get to vote if there's a tie. Is that right?
That's correct.
Right. Whoever is taking the GC probably shouldn't vote, is the way I understand it. Tom, Cameron, right? No. Whoever, whether it's the GSR, group secretary, or whoever, they don't get a vote. There's a tie.
All right. Okay. Brilliant. Yeah. Because I was going to say, if you get a vote and then there's a tie, obviously you're going to go for the one that you voted for, which is going to like upset others. But I think I need to create a new service position then at my home group for someone that doesn't mind not having a vote. And maybe only comes along once a month for the GC. It's something for my group to consider and something for me to put to my group, but thank you.
Thank you, Jojo. Glad you're here. Christy, come on in.
Hi, Kirsty. Grateful Addict. Thank you for taking the meeting, guys. So my question is, so there's a difference between a meeting and a group, but in my experience, we have group consciences and a lot of people invite everyone to stay. And I might be wrong because I don't know much and I'm just going through the traditions at the minute. But what I've seemed to be learning is that it should be the group members, the home group members, that have a vote, and not just like, say, a newcomer that's been in a week and is just going to 100 meetings and it's not a home group. But I'm so confused because I've seen it happening in so many meetings. I was wondering if you could clarify who should be at the group conscience and whether, if everybody's allowed, are some people just to be like observing rather than taking part in voting?
May I respond to that?
Absolutely, Tom.
Okay, thank you. The first thing to remember is that the group conscience of the group benefits from as many heads as possible. You know, if we are just two people having a business meeting, our two brains together does not really make a good group conscience. We need a bigger group conscience and a well-informed group conscience. So with that said, it's good to have a lot of members weighing in and debating and discussing and proposing. But sure, this is. I don't think there is any recommendation of this. This is up to every single group. Sorry, every single group's group conscience to decide. That's my take. Thank you.
Thanks, Tom. I just like that. I've been involved in a number of groups over 20 years. I've been to some GCs where The voting members are those who have attended three previous business meetings consecutively, and then they're allowed to vote. I've been to other meetings where anyone who shows up at the business meeting has a right to vote. It really, as Tom already reiterated, it really depends on how the group comes together in a consensus as how do they run their business meetings and who gets the vote. But other than that, it's up to the GC to decide those policies and procedures for the group.
Can I just add a tiny bit to my question? So members that haven't got a sponsor and work in the steps, are they still allowed to come along and vote?
Well, again, it depends on how the group wants to. If the group says, yeah, everyone gets a vote, everyone gets a vote. I'll say this, and we're going to do this at the end of this workshop. This is why it behooves the GSR to be very familiar with Robert's Rules of Order, because Robert's Rules of Order, parliamentary procedure in a democratic situation, allows for the maximum efficiency of civil discourse and debate. So it doesn't regress into a shouting matches and people. I've been to business meetings where chairs are flying across the room. Like, that is not rules of order. So, you know, it behooves us to have civil discourse. But again, you know, who is voting? That depends on the policies and procedures that the group comes together in a group conscience. As I said, some groups say anyone who shows up at the business meeting can vote. Other people say, well, you know, only our members. Well, then you got, well, what constitutes a group member? Like I said, some groups say you got to attend three business meetings consecutively, or, you know, you actually have to sign up as a member and be counted as one of our members. Again, it depends on how the group wishes to handle those matters.
Does that answer your question, Christy?
Thank you. Yes.
Perfect. Sergio, come on in, honey.
Yes, my name is Sergio, grateful to Recovered Addicts, and thank you for the workshop and all the tariff service. And I was thinking, like, looking at the fourth tradition and taking into account that areas and districts should not and don't have authority to manage groups and to micromanage groups, can an area have requirements for a group to be part of the lists that exist, the meeting lists, and impose rules so that the meetings need to fulfill specific rules in order to be part of an area?
Oh, good question. So I'm going to let Sophie to weigh in on that, because I know she's participated in this procedure. But we actually, when someone petitions the CA online service body to be a part of this area and be supported by this area, we have certain requirements that a group needs to cleave to be counted a member. Sophie, you want to, because I know you participate a lot in this process.
Yeah, absolutely. So my name is Sophie. I'm an addict. The OSA doesn't have any, when I say OSA, I mean online service area of Cocaine Anonymous. There are no, we didn't come up with any certain requirements. I will say this, as far as the area group conscience, we follow what is a CA group in the CA manual. So if you go to the WSM, I don't know, Cameron, if you want to bring it up really quickly, there are 6 points that define a Cocaine Anonymous group, right? And I'm going to try and do this from the top of my head, so forgive me if I get it wrong. I'm not 100% prepared. But the first one is when two or three or more people are gathered together in the name of recovery to carry the message of Cocaine Anonymous with the 12 steps of Cocaine Anonymous, right? So it's very specific to our message using our steps. Also, there's no affiliation. So we have no outside strings attached to us, right? We're focused on our fifth tradition, the one thing and one thing we only do, and that's to carry the message. We have no outside affiliation that we are self-supporting. So in case for online, one of the things that we look at, does the group have enough, you know, do they have their own platform? They're not dependent on another group or another area or district to support the platform. Do they have enough people to conduct service? Has the meeting been up and running for a while so that when that link is posted on our website, people go to it and they find it, right? Because we all know us, we might get a bright idea to go to a meeting And if the meeting's not there, we might not come back for years. So we want to make sure those links are always accurate. And I'm trying to remember, God, thank you, Cameron. So yeah, right here. The only requirement for CA membership is for a CA group is a desire to stop using cocaine and all other mind altering substances, right? So we don't care what drug or what substance you use. If you have a desire to stop, you're welcome to call yourself a Cocaine Anonymous group. You're fully self-supporting. You're not depending on any outside money or service to be able to function. Your group's primary purpose is to help addicts recover through the 12 steps of CA. That's very specific. Your group has no outside affiliation. So here, we also ask the question, is the group already aligned with an area or district? Something that Cameron mentioned briefly is the voting for our delegates, right? Each member gets one vote. Every area gets a certain number of delegates. And each group can only align with one area. So we want to make sure you're not aligned with anybody else. And then if you say no, we're going to take your word for it. That, and then we'll go ahead and bring you up for recommendation. And then CA has no opinion on outside issues, right? The only thing we do is recovery, and we do that at the best that we know how to do. And CA group's public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. So if you're a CA group and you meet these six qualifying points, then you can petition to join, in this particular case, the online service area. The only two things that our area has as a conscience around all of this is you're an already existing and functioning group, right? You don't come to us and say you want to do a meeting, and then we kind of put a link up and wait for you to get everything together and hold a meeting. By the time you show up and petition the area, you're already existing. And then also, just because of being able to manage it and keep everything current and updated, only OSA groups can go on the OSA website or you use OSA platforms. When COVID first happened, we tried to help everybody that was online, and it was just unmanageable. We just didn't have the hands for that. So those are, if it meets those requirements and you guys are an existing group, you can be on our meeting list. Did that help, Sergio?
Yeah, it helps. Just a quick question to finish. And if a group fulfills those requirements, get ratified by the area, and then the GSR never show up at the business meeting, how can we handle that?
To be honest with you, you know, I don't know what to do. We can't force people to show up. If the way I see it is, this is the group's business. If you have a GSR that's not showing up at area in order to keep the area and the group connected, so you guys know what's going on and we're here to help support you, your group, then I would elect a new GSR if it was my home group. Part of being a GSR is being able to attend the monthly area business meeting.
Okay, yes. Thank you.
And just to add to Sophie, again, this goes back to concept 9, good leadership, good selection of leaders. And I'll say this about when I became a GSR for a group, back when I used to do in-person meetings, it was a tremendous growth experience because, you know, some of you know me personally, I love to crack off and say lots of outrageous politically incorrect things. When I became a GSR and as a delegate, certainly of online service area, I'm much more mindful of what I say. Because I'm no longer just Cameron F. I represent a group. I represent an area, right? And there's a responsibility to that. So it's a tremendous opportunity to learn self-discipline and to grow as a trusted servant and the spiritual principles that are intertwined with that role. And it's a life-changing experience. It really is. And if you're not participating in the service structure, you're really missing out on one of the three legacies of our recipe for our recovery, which is service. And it really is the icing on the cake. When you take your principles of recovery and you take your principles of the traditions and the principles of the concepts, and you actualize those principles at the group level or the district level or the area level or the world level, and to leverage out those principles and the application of that, you literally carry a really important message and play a very important integral participatory part in the business of Cocaine Anonymous. It's an extraordinary experience. I highly recommend it. Thanks.
Thank you, Cameron. We have one more question. Oh, I'm going to
thank you, guys.
Thank you, Sergio. It's RVDB. I'm not sure how to say that.
Yes, my name is Roy. I just wanted to shorten it. Hi. So thank you, guys. I have a question about the traditions, actually, not necessarily about being a GSR, but there are quite a lot of rules that you'll hear in meetings often, like, let's say, no cross-sharing. And I wonder, are they really, like, linked to the traditions? Or what do the traditions say about those kind of rules? And
That's a good question. So, you know, like the groups I'm involved with, we do cross sharing. I've been to lots of groups where there's no cross sharing. So it goes mostly to tradition too, that a group answers to no other authority but their own loving God and group conscience. So if a group conscience says, well, we want to run our meeting this way and no cross sharing is part of it, the group has the right through tradition 4 to do that.
All right.
Yes, the traditions are involved. I would say 2 and 4 get involved with that particular tradition. And then ultimately to even tradition 5. Well, we think the most effective way to carry the message to those that still suffer is not to, you know, put them in the, like I put people in the hot seat, but that's the way I like to carry the message. But another group might not be akin to that flavor of the experience. And no, we shouldn't have cross-sharing. Let the newcomer be where they're at, share what they like, and then let's move on. So again, it goes to the prevailing group conscience based on tradition 2, tradition 4, tradition 5.
Thank you.
And ultimately,
so
even tradition 12, where we put principle ahead of personality.
Absolutely.
And so, can I ask another question? Or
sure, Roy. I'm sorry, I lost your brain. Go ahead.
All right, thank you. So what if a group just decides to not follow the traditions at all? Is that also a possibility? Are they able to do that?
That's another good question. And yes, if, you know, even I think it's mentioned in the 12 and 12, where if a group decided to hire a preacher and earn money outside for the group, that a group is certainly entitled to do that. I don't think a group would survive very long doing that. But you see, tradition 4 was written, given each group the inviolate right. That means no one, no service body can interfere with a group's inviolate right to carry its message to the addict that still suffers. And it does say there is a qualifier, unless it affects other CA groups or CA as a whole. I can't really think of anything that would affect CA as a whole or another group with what our group is doing. I remember here in Toronto, there was a schism within the AA fellowship where two groups, these were agnostic groups, rewrote the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and removed God from it. I thought, well, if anything's going to affect AA and AA groups as a whole, it would be rewriting the 12 steps without God in it. The prevailing thought at the world level of AA was, no, they get the stay. And they upheld their inviolate right to carry its message. Because when Bill W. wrote Tradition 4, he wanted to write it with the broadest possible highway that nothing might be excluded from a group's ability to carry the message to an addict that still suffers. And tradition 2, group conscience, gets to decide what that message is and how they wish to carry it to the addict that still suffers. Also, bear in mind, there are no rules or governing with the traditions, although some use them as a cudgel against other groups or districts or whatever. It was never meant to be. If there's unity in your fellowship or in your group, hey, the traditions are in play. But when there's a schism, when there is an argument, when there is a divide, usually it's one or two traditions that are in conflict. And through civil discourse, we try to work it out and come to some kind of consensus to bring back our formula for unity. I hope that answers.
Yes. I would like to add that You know, the 12 traditions of Cocaine Anonymous are to the groups what the 12 steps of Cocaine Anonymous are to the individual. A suggestion. That's it, a suggestion. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Cameron. Thank you, Roy, for the good questions. Dave, come on in.
Hi, thanks for having me. Yeah, I've got a question regarding safeguarding. And so I got like the group conduct guidelines, our common welfare statements, personal conduct statements, safeguarding statements. If there's someone in a meeting that's uncomfortable with, say, someone else in the meeting, maybe, yeah, and they've raised that concern, what's the best way to deal with that? Because it says in the statements to, you know, to approach the person and, you know, stop them from behaving that way. But is there any recommended ways that that happens? Because I know it happens at a number of meetings, but it's something that's come up recently. So yep. Just wondered if anyone had a point of view or a method of action.
Yeah, sure. Tom, alcoholic and addict. When you have somebody who is like disrupting or threatening the individuals or groups in the meeting, you have tradition one in place. Our common welfare should come first. Then again, you have tradition three that says that the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop using cocaine and all other mind-altering substances, which means that basically you can't turn him down or kick him out. But you have tradition 12 to use there, you know? Personality, principles before personalities. So what I usually do in that case, if it's a Zoom meeting, I will bring that person into the waiting room or a breakout room and speak with them and say, you're welcome here, you're a CA member. Your behavior that you're bringing right now is not welcome. You see, principles before personalities. This person who is here is just as sick as we are, you know? Also need unity in meetings and whatnot. But if their behavior is detrimental to the group and the recovery and spreading the message in the group, then that behavior must be kept out from the group. Does this answer your question?
Thanks, Tom. I'd like to just add to that. I started a group in 2008 here in Toronto, in-person meeting. It was a very strong group. We'd average 40 to 60 people every Monday night. They were the sevenths were always very generous. We were giving $300-$400 every quarter to our area to support that service committee. And then a member came in, and this member was a sexual predator. And the behavior was so abhorrent that I'm getting calls as one of the you know, trusted servants of the group from women showing me screenshots and various things that this person was doing. And our membership started shrinking. People didn't want to come as long as this person was part of the group. We tried talking to this person. Person blew us off, said, doesn't matter. This is my business. Mind your own business. He continued to, in my opinion, terrorize the untreated women of the group. So finally, I lost it. I remember, and this one thing, this is why civil discourse is so important. I got really angry and I lost it in the business meeting. And it got into a real head-to-head violent confront. And the group said, look, I said, either this guy goes or I go. And the group said, well, this obviously is a personality problem with you, Cameron. We're not getting rid of this person. I said, fine. Mark my words. This man will destroy this group within the year. And I left the group and I started TGF and the Midnight Rounders. And within a year, that group went dark. And as Tom already mentioned, when you put the common welfare of the group second, and the individual welfare first, a lot of problems can be occurred. Yeah, we want to put their individual welfare. It's important. But the common welfare of the group must come first. Otherwise, we will die alone. And that group died. And who knows, you know, what members lost the message or went back out or whatever. And that's a problem. But again, you know what? You got tradition one coming into play. You had tradition two coming into play. Group conscience says, no, Cameron, we think he gets to stay. You got to go. you know, tradition three comes into play, the only requirement membership. Tradition four, the group's inviolate autonomy. Tradition 12, principles before personnel. It's not a cut and dry situation. It's very messy working these issues out on the ground. But the tools of our service structure, Robert's rules, our traditions, our concepts, allows us to navigate even the most heinous situations and try and come up with some sort of resolve. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Cameron. I can just say that learning how to navigate issues, these kinds of issues in the group, I learned how to just use the same tools to navigate life issues in the rest of my life. It makes it so much easier. The same tools can be used. Let's see. Ron, come on in, honey. You've got a question?
Yeah. Hi, family. Ron, alcoholic addict, GSR, Leipzig, Germany area, and GC chair, OSA DR. So not in conflict, two different entities, so that's okay. As far as I can see it. Question. When you have, I'm GC chair, okay, for that group. I'm a big fan of keeping records. With the records, I can look back and I can see where the group conscious was, how the group decided, what action to take, whatever is going on in case somebody wants to bring up a motion or wants to change something that's already in place, you know, it can be dealt with accordingly, right? Okay. What if more than two-thirds of the records are missing? And now you have people coming up, yeah, we've done this like this all the time. It was decided back then and then, and there are no minutes, no records available for that particular decision. Now, as a GC chair, I do not have a vote. I only have a vote in a split decision. And I love this tabling idea. If it's like a 50-50, you know what? Yeah, group is torn. So you don't have that two-third, right? So I would like to take that to another thing. But how could I, or what are my possibilities as a GC chair to then say, like, listen, I don't have no record of this. This is he said, she said. How can I bring that to the group without having an opinion?
Well, I'm going to let our archivist handle that. Cameron?
Well, first of all, I'm in agreement with you, Ron. Minutes have saved a lot of redundant discussions. I'm a big fan of minutes, and I'm a big the unsung heroes in the fellowship when it comes to archives are the secretaries, whose responsibility it is to record the minutes. However, if there are no minutes and there are gaps in the minute, I've looked at the records of our minutes at the world level right from inception, and there are gaps, and sometimes if there's no written record, you're right, it's a he said, she said sort of scenario, and perhaps the motion's got to come on the floor and be, you know, debated. And but again, if you're in a neutral position, all you can do is suggest or guide. You're kind of like, it's, you know, one of the things I've always added at our area here locally, and I think is a really excellent position for any district or area to have, and even a group could have one, and that's the role of parliamentarian. They're kind of like the sergeant of arms, and they keep civil discourse in order, and no one regresses into name calling or condescending, attitudes or pejorative thoughts or words or anything like that. So sometimes if there's a gap, you just got to deal with it again. I know Susan's got lots of experience over the years with a lot of these matters.
I would like to say also that, my opinion, a business meeting without minutes is not a business meeting. It's just a remembrance of a discussion. Thank you.
Excuse me, just a little follow-up to that. Sure. The thing is that, you know, that this is no bad intention. It's basically, there's been a lot of fluctuation, very much fluctuation, ups and downs in that group. And it's just been, in parts, been kept alive, if you want to put it like that. So minutes or people were trusted to make the minutes, kept the minutes basically on their private laptops, whatever it was, went back out, minutes are gone. So what I did now is I have the Google Drive and I established a folder for the GC minutes and everything I do, whatever, everything is going to be parked in there. So if I drop out, you don't know. I mean, you know, I do it one day at a time, right? If I drop out, I know where the minutes are and people have the minutes. But that hasn't taken place. So now there's really a section of like over 2 years missing. And that's a big thing, especially when people then want to come in. And now I have run into a conflict of tradition one and three in a certain way. If someone wants to force something against the greater good of the, because he said, she said, wants to force some rule through, is, how can I say this, is very well seen within the group, but cannot prove his point that that rule was actually made. And it goes against the interest of the group. Then I'm almost touching base sort of like on one.
Yeah.
If you I know, kind just, of like see that right, I'm just trying to get clarification because, you know, I learn every day.
So, Ron, and then I know Tom wants to say something. You know what? There's, even if the minutes did show this discussion previously, that's no precedent. It might explain a certain precedent at that period. But any motion, any decision, anything going on has the right. A group member has the right to put a motion on the floor and flip it. Even Bill mentions it. I think it's in the 12 and 12. One month the group could vote this way, and the very next month the group could vote the opposite way. The perception of control, which, you know, who are the control freaks here? I know I'm one. It's an illusion, right? You know, the way our fellowship works, things can flip back and forth. I've seen it happen at the world level many times. The only thing, we just navigate through it, Ron. It's messy on the ground. If it was clear cut and everybody was in harmony, we'd be one big happy fellowship. Well, I got news for all of you. The fellowship was born in a riot. That's why we have coffee pots. That's why resentments are out there. And that's why we have so many meetings.
Yeah, that's right. My best opinion to you, my advice, sorry, would be to go, you know, take it to a new group conscience. Say that we might or might not have done this in the past this way, but how do we want to do it now? How do we want to do it in the future? And the group conscience will show, you know?
Yes. Thank you, Tom. That was a great question, Ron. Thank you so much for being here. Susan, it's wonderful to have you with us today.
Hey, everyone. It's good to be here. Nice to see new and old familiar faces. You know, the whole issue between, you know, between suggestions and our service structure can be a tricky one. And when it comes to suggestions, yes, they are powerful. And I'm reminded that if you're going to jump out of an airplane, it's suggested that you wear a parachute. So when it comes to the steps and traditions and so forth, I think there is a, you know, there is a tipping point. That's just my opinion, and those of you who know me know that I have many of them. So I would like to lovingly ask why OSAGSRs have not had any opportunity to take information in the SR14 back to their groups and report back to the area.
I can answer that. That's because we just got the information, and we are actually planning to share that at the area meeting, right? After the area meeting.
That gives no time for the GSRs to ask questions about how they take the information back to their meetings. And that is part, in my experience, of the delegates' responsibility to make sure that the meetings have ample time to come back to the area and ask questions. And that's not going to happen. And there are a lot of really important things in this SR14 that, in my opinion, should have been brought forward to the area before now, because that SR14 has been out for a while. It's not new information. So, you know, I appreciate that everybody's busy, that they, you know, I mean, it's not a perfect world. I get that. But in terms of the structure of Cocaine Anonymous, the delegates' responsibility is a major portion of how we keep our service structure intact. And so, you know,
you're absolutely right to do that. Like Tom said, we just got them and we're trying to get it all together so everybody can get the information and have time to get it back to their groups. And we'll keep all our GSRs updated on that. We're hoping to talk after the workshop and hopefully update everybody, because there is a lot of important information in there. Thank you so much for that, Susan. Lennis, come on in, honey.
It's not my turn, I think. Marna and Wayne first.
Oh, you're sorry. Marna, Wayne, come on in.
Good evening, all. My name is Wayne. I'm a very grateful recovered addict. Just
Hi, my name is Marna. I'm an alcoholic addict.
First GSR workshop since 2015, and I just want to say it feels absolutely amazing to be here. I've never been to CA GSR workshop. I've been to NA and AA. I lived and died for the fellowship of NA and AA. And what I'm going to share now, it's actually on a personal level, is that if it wasn't for the minutes of GSRs, what we do when we come, I'm accustomed to face-to-face meetings. I got clean on the screen this time around, and I found the minutes of a meeting or our old home group, and that's what saved my ass. That's what got me back to recovery. I just sat there looking through, God, this is what I need to do. When I got clean now again, I forgot how intense this is. I forgot how intense we are when it comes to rules and regulations. Not one of us fucking adheres to rules and regulations. We hate rules and regulations. The traditions separate us from rules and regulations. When I got clean now again, I went to AA meeting and they wanted to kick me out. You're not welcome here. I said, for what reason? Because you guys break anonymity. I know what this is all about. They'd broken anonymity with a heroin junkie in town at AA, and I said to him, you guys have broken anonymity. And they argued with me. They bullied me out of the meeting. They tried to. And I just pulled up tradition to say, the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And that's the only reason I'm here. And I'm not going to fight with you guys about it. And I could feel God breathing down my neck, because I know that I'm here to save my fucking ass, not my face. And it's through the traditions and the concepts. And I forgot completely about how this keeps me not just clean, makes me a way better person. Thank you so much. You guys will be seeing a lot more of us, and I really appreciate being here. It's like, thank you. Love you all.
Oh, thank you for being here, guys. We're really glad that you've been able to come out and spend the afternoon with us. Linus?
Lemus addict. I have a question, what we were talking about earlier, about the definition of a CA group. If the groups can go against the traditions, and they can if they want to, don't they contradict the requirements for CA group that they live up to join the fellowship? Because that list of requirements, they are like have the traditions if you bring that list up again. So what happens then? Are they still a CA group, even if they use tradition 4 to go against the rest of their traditions? Or, I mean, is there a way out of that contradiction? That's my question.
Let me answer that. The list is functional requirements, while the traditions are guidance. So there's a difference there. And since we're at it, I might want to add that a lot of people asked me about how can we are not supposed to be organized as of tradition 9. CA as such ought never be organized. So how comes we have a structure? Are we supposed to not have a structure? No, it's because we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. But in order to answer the question, who do they serve? We need to know where this mandate is coming from, right? That's where we have a structure. And that's also why a group can only be a member of one district, one area. And an area can only be a member of one region, because we need to have it integral. We need to know who we are serving. That was maybe a bit out of the track, but did it help, Linus?
Not really. You said traditions, they are guidelines. Okay, I get that. But you said it was different with the requirements. How?
Yes, the requirements are functional requirements that define a CA group. We need like to have, for an addict, it's tradition 3. For a group, there is this 6 requirements to become a CA group. You see?
Okay. But if those functional requirements, if they are the same as the traditions, you're going against both at the same time, right?
No. Well, if you don't tick off all the 6 requirements, then you're not the CA group. And then the traditions doesn't matter anymore. Okay. I mean, you can still tick off all these 6 boxes, be a CA group and break traditions. A group can do that, because the traditions are suggestions. But like Susan so well put it, you might want a parachute.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
By the way, Linus.
Linus, for you.
Sorry, Sophie.
No, go ahead, Cameron.
I was just going to say.
No, go ahead.
Who's going first, you or me?
You are.
Okay. You go first, too. I just wanted to say, I've broken all 12 traditions. I break the 12th tradition daily. As much as I don't like to, I do. And I'm no saint. You know, I think the distinction between, you know, the World Service Manual is our best thinking at the group conscience level, at the world level, and they have their requirements for being a group, and they're prudent requirements. But tradition 4 gives a group, you know, the inviolate right to even circumvent them. Now, as an area body, we might say, all right, this group is definitely out of whack with what the service committee was elected to do at the online service area level. Some discussion needs to take place. And then the group conscience of the area may decide, well, I don't think this group really is part of us anymore, and maybe they should find another area to be with. Or if there's enough GSR to say, we don't like the requirements, we think anyone should be allowed to petition online service area and be a part of it. And the GSRs at the area level can come together in a group conscience, say, yeah, we agree with that. There should only be one requirement, 2 or more people getting together for the sake of helping the addict who still suffers. All other requirements are suggestions. Again, it comes down to the prevailing group conscience, informed conscience. And that works at the group level, the district, the area, and even the world level. You know, again, some people use the World Service Manual as a cudgel to mandate and govern groups or areas or districts. It's not the way it works, right? And it ultimately always comes down to the basic building block of the fellowship, and that's the group. That's why UGSRs are so important. Her group conscience carries a significant impact, especially when it comes together in a consensus. Hope that helps clarify things. Sophie?
I just want to add this, and it comes, I don't know exactly where in the 12 and 12 it says it, but Bill very clearly talks about the groups that don't follow the traditions don't survive. You know, people who don't live the principles in all their affairs, if we don't work a program, we're going to relapse, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. Groups that don't follow the traditions, they'll eventually die, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly, when we're not in it for the common welfare, when we're not carrying the message of Cocaine Anonymous, the message of recovery. If I'm getting into it with my ego and I'm trying to control things and I'm bringing in outside issues, how long are people going to stick around? So really, I think, you know, Tradition 4 serves the group best here. They kind of have to figure it out and sort it out for themselves. But the groups that are unable to do that or unwilling to do that, I've just seen from my own experience, don't last because they get focused on other things. They're not focused on helping the newcomer that's or the addict that still suffers. Does that help a little bit?
Yeah, it does.
I saw Sugar Shane with his hand up.
Come on in, Shane.
I was clapping. Sorry. That wasn't in my hand. That was me clapping in agreement.